speaker of the afternoon is Ms. Luo from
Glasgow.
Glasgow.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to come here to present our work. We only recently moved into this area for the application-orientated universe estimation problem. And I'm mainly here to learn and to hopefully get some suggestions and help in our problem. Okay, so we are interested in the human gallbladder problems, so it's a medical problem. And okay, so just briefly introduce you. The problem, you know, when gallbladder, the function is to produce a liquid called bile, and it's produced in the liver, and when you are not eating, there's a slow filling called refilling process going from the liver into the gallbladder to fill it up, and then after a few hours when you start to eat, and the food or coffee give you some kind of a chemical stimuli which contract the gallbladder, and the pressure goes up, and then the forces the valve to open, and then the bile will be squeezed out into the stomach. The whole process takes about half an hour. And in most of the cases, the gallbladder functions fine, and you squeeze out about 70% of the volume into the stomach. And then after 30 minutes, and the process stops, the valve closes, and then the bile starts to do the refilling again. Okay, so... okay, so... okay. Okay. You do much more. Yeah. So most of the cases people are fine, but you do have a gallbladder problem or gallstone problem, and this actually dated as early as the 17th century, when gallstones were, these are the stone size, and you can have even bigger ones, it appeared in gallbladder. And when you have gallstones, sometimes even if you don't have gallstones, if you have gallbladder problem, it's very, very painful problem. So if you go to the hospital, and most likely the doctors will remove your gallbladder. So this is routinely performed in UK every year, and at a huge cost. So this is a recommended treatment, and because otherwise the reason is too complicated to resolve, and it's easy, kind of, especially nowadays, it's kind of keyhole surgery, it's one day if you have no complication. And the trouble is not all operations provided us resolve the problem, because for quite a lot of people, problems go away. For other people, they still feel pain. In the gallbladder area, and they come back, and after a while they're giving drugs, and or they cut a bit more or something, and then eventually they just send away, and because it's not a fatal problem, but it's nuisance. So it's for those patients who had operations and cannot resolve the problem, that people really want to understand a bit more of the reason for the pain, and so that we can have a better diagnosis, because sometimes maybe the pain is not from gallbladder, it's from somewhere else, so there's no need to remove the gallbladder. And so we wanted to build up models to understand what causes the problem. Okay, so we are interested in one type of gallbladder pain called a calculus pain. And this is a peculiar kind of problem where you have no gallstones whatsoever. Everything looks normal, but you feel just as pain as people have a lot of stones. And there are other groups of patients which we are not studying here, the people who have a lot of stones, and they just carry the stones safely, no pain whatsoever. And so in that case, doctors will leave them alone too. So it's a pain, the symptom which causes that you have to have surgeries. Otherwise, you can't carry the stones safely. And so 50% of patients who have no stones and had operations and come back to hospital, and so those patients, really, it'd be really, really nice to find a way to reduce the list of patients who undergo unnecessary surgeries. And the clinical criterion for judging whether you're entitled for surgery is so-called injection fraction, so the volume injection. If your gallbladder contract efficiently, get most of bile out, then that's fine. Otherwise, if it's not contracting, then the hypothesis is the bile is getting concentrated and maybe it's a malfunction, so they will remove your gallbladder. And but this is very unreliable. We know it is, and I'll show you some data. So what we believe is the pain is more correlated to the mechanical stress inside the gallbladder tissue. So this is a clinically what they did is you can do controlled study, inject CCK, which is so you can control the amount of drug level, and then wait of half an hour and then measure the volume change in the meantime and see whether the patients are feeling painful or not. And then they measure the volume. They use ultrasound to measure the volume change. And then they calculate the ejection fraction and say whether there is correlation. And there wasn't. But what we think is, okay, so whether we also model the gallbladder as ellipsoid, clinically everybody's modeled so they can estimate the volume. So you have three principal axes and the diameters in each direction. And they are subject to uniform internal pressure. And you can estimate this pressure from the volume change using simple analytical models of volume change, continuity equation, and the change of volume is proportional to change of pressure. It's a simple constitutive law to relate the force and the displacement. And then you can estimate from the volume change how much pressure is applied. And then if you further assume the gallbladder is a thin membrane, then you can even get the stresses analytically from the continuum mechanics paper, and then all the stresses in the theta phi and shear stresses are all related to the shape of the of gallbladder at any one time. Okay, so using this as a very quick estimate, we applied this for the data set of clinical data set of 51 patients. All with underwent surgeries without gallstones, and we use the ejection fraction, maximum pressure, and stress to say and compare the correlation with the pain, and we discovered that ejection fraction is a poorest indicator. Pressure is slightly better because pressure is actually related to stress, but stress is more accurate because stress. It's not only due to the pressure, but also due to the shape change, because the stress distribution is related to how ellipsoid, how elongated ellipsoid is. But that was a simple calculation. The stress calculated is may not be very reliable. And if you look at the gallbladder wall, it's actually quite complicated, and the fiber orientation cells, and smooth muscles, and things like that. And the mechanics has been advanced in such a state that more sophisticated modeling estimating the stresses are available now. So, for example, if you look at the experiments of the this is force and stretch the tissue behavior, then it is highly nonlinear, and all the previous stress estimation assumed the linear, which means that the line is straight, which is not true. For most of the tissue, soft tissues in bioengineering, that it's almost nonlinear like this. Most of them are like this. So this is one thing we need to take into consideration. So we want to develop, but of course to do nonlinear analysis requires knowing the mechanical properties, and we cannot do the stretching test of the gallbladder in the patients, and all we have are the images. So we need to use inverse approach. And also there are fibers in it. So, and then we want to see how good the comparison is. And so this is a standard forward problem. If you know what is a zero stress configuration is when the gallbladder is not subjected to any force whatsoever, what is loading, so what is pressure basically, what is a mechanical property, what that is key, and the boundary condition, all this can be estimated. And then you usually, based on all these properties, you can calculate from the force balance Newton's second law, basically, to find the deformed configuration. So that is a forward problem, a standard problem. And inverse problem, there are two types. One is you know everything else. You know the loading, you know material properties, you know everything. All you don't know is a zero stress configuration. So like in an arterial, you actually don't know what the arterial is like, and absolutely no loading. No loading is not a zero stress configuration, because if you cut the material open, it will spun open with the angle, because it's already preloaded, kind of. So that when you really have loading, the stress actually is smaller than without loading. So so the soft tissue specifically have these properties. The other type of inverse problem is you know everything else, you know the zero stress configuration. So for example, you have done the experiments and cut the arterioles open and find out the zero configuration, and then you can estimate material properties. Okay, so you can and then do all these things. And so unfortunately for our problem, we have we don't know either of these two, and so we have to make some assumptions, and we ideally you'd be able to do some experiments to identify the zero stress configuration and then estimate material properties. But of course, even if you do some experiments, you have to take the configuration on an average sense, because everybody is different. And so in this talk, we are going to just deal with the top first problem to try to estimate the material properties and assume zero stress configuration, which would be close, but not exactly the zero stress configuration. So this is a pressure volume curve. It's a bit like a heart. So during the refilling process, there's a very small pressure increase and the volume is enlarged, because muscle is relaxed. So you can filling a lot of bile into the gallbladder. And then upon some kind of chemical activation, there's a contraction going on, and the pressure goes up, and then the valve opens and you start to do emptying, and the images are taken along here. Okay, so what we want to do is we actually want to estimate the pressure, the stress from here to here, and then this is active contraction, which involves other modeling, which we'll not talk about here, but we have done modeling that part. But it's this part we're going to focus on. Okay. So immediately when we start to do this modeling, we discovered that a lot of people, when they have done experiments on guinea pigs' gallbladders, and they claim that the gallbladder is isentropic. That means there's no preferred direction in the mechanical properties. And even if they have done published curves like this, they are obviously different if you stretch in different directions. They still claim this is more or less isentropic, because the curves are not so far away. But if you do modeling, you'll immediately find out this is just not possible, because whatever initial configuration you have, as soon as you have pressure inside, it's like a balloon. If it is isentropic, then it will become spheric. So whatever happens. But the images always show gallbladder is ellipsoid. So that means there is preferred direction. And so there are fibers in certain directions constrain the motion. And so we just have to consider the fiber. Otherwise, you cannot solve the inverse problem at all. And so what we did is we then, because there's no detailed measurements of the fiber directions, so what we do is we assume there are bundles of fiber directions like this, but we don't know the beta. So we are going to treat the beta as one of the parameters to estimate inversely. So there will be a fiber family in this direction and a fiber family in this direction. Okay. And then in addition, we also need to have a constitutive law. So for people who are not familiar, you can ignore this slide. This is just to say, if you have a hyperelastic material, so the constitutive law can be determined by so-called strain energy. So it's W strain energy, and which is consists of two parts, isentropic part and anisentropic part. Isentropic part is this part. This is a new Hawking model, if you like. So I1 is a trace of FFT. F is a deformation gradient. It's just deformation gradient of the soft tissue. So most of the engineering mechanics problems are linearized version of this part. So any software give you mechanical stresses usually use this term, but linearized it. And this one actually is nonlinear. If you do have a fiber orientations, then you add more terms to this string energy. So this is a fiber family A, this is fiber family B. So you can say if a fiber is wrinkled, as in by tissues, they, if you are not under stretch, they're all wrinkled, they're not doing anything. But if you stretch it, then this one become tougher and tougher. So if when the fibers are stretched, they are really holding the load. So to protect the tissue. Okay, so those are the constitutive loads. Those are relatively new constitutive loads for soft tissues and proved to be very successful in arterial modeling. And so what we have done here is we adopt this constitutive law, and of course all the material properties like beta, C, K1, K2 represent fibers and the isentropic part and the fiber directions. We make it into a cost function so that if you use forward problem to solve the problem, then the images, dimensions are very close to the images at any time step. So all these are done iteratively. So this is a very conventional inverse problem, except sometimes if you don't have the model right, we have tried. The reason we use this complicated model is this is the only model which gives us good results. If you use simple constitutive law, you do not have a converged results. So the first thing is to validate on arterial work, which has been well published and studied recently. So this is a piece of arterial, and the fiber orientation is also determined by beta. And that's loading, that's measured. And this is also string energy, very similar to what we have used for the gallbladder. Okay. And then this is an experiment of the diameter change of the arterial and versus pressure. And this circles are the experimental data by Avro's group in 2010, and they also use inverse approach curve fitted this with this dotted line using Fung model. Fung model is a different model, also taking into account of nonlinearity, but doesn't specify the fiber orientations. And this is a model we used with all the fiber orientations, and the fit is quite good. You can see probably it's better if you want to argue. But anyway, so those are the parameters estimated from this, and it's quite easy to do for this one, and it's great with the published work. And those are our results. So these are just two sets of gallbladder, because we got 51 samples. We just show you a few. And so those are the diameter change in three directions, so in three different curves with the pressure. And so all the curves have to change in a similar direction. So not all the one you can fit very well. This is again because we still used some assumptions. This is volume. If you only look at volume change with the pressure, then the agreement is quite good. And there are more samples, and I want to show you all of them. But most of them are very good. And so I just show you a group of those are the gallbladder samples. This is from 1 to 30, and 37. Actually, I don't know why the number is not in order. But basically, we had you have many data, but you choose the one which you have a more complete image size. And then you can see the beta and C, K1, K2, they all in a range, and they are actually strongly patient dependent. So it's not like you can just take average. And interestingly, if you compare this with the arterial, rabbit arterial, and you find those parameters are roughly within the range of the median, because arterial has two layers, median and adventitia, actually three layers, but endothelial we don't count. For mechanical properties. And when people do experiments on animals, they don't talk about subject dependent. They assume all the animals are the same. Humans certainly are not the same. And I think maybe because we live longer, so therefore we show more diversity. And if you use young rabbits, maybe they tend to become of the same size. They tend to be similar. That's the argument, but I don't know. It's never been proved rigorously. So this is a I want to show you the analytical the stress, which are very, very simple models I showed you before, that with the analytical stress of stresses, compared with our complicated stresses models. Okay, so you can see the patterns actually are similar. The peak stresses usually occur on the flatter side of the wall. So when the curvature is smaller, then the stress is higher. And so, but the patterns are similar. So that shows the quick estimation it works. But if you look at the quantity, this is a peak stress, and for all the different gallbladder samples, and you can see that analytical ones seriously, significantly underestimate the peak stress, and so the ratio can be as big as nearly 2-3 times. But for some cases, they are very similar. So for some cases, analytical model is good. But if you really want to use a stress as a criterion for pain, then you will have to use more complicated models so you can have a more reliable estimation. Okay. So in conclusion, it is possible to use inverse approach to estimate the nonlinear properties, and the approach I'm used may not be the best one. I'm very happy to have any better suggestions, and we haven't really have solved all the problems because they are zero stress configuration issues and other issues. But even with such a relatively simple approach, we already found that the underlying structure, fiber structure nonlinearity, is important. And specifically, the material properties are patient specific, so you cannot use one set of property, especially you cannot use one set of animal properties and use it for all human beings, and that just would be wrong for this particular application. And then we need to work on to get better estimation. So that's my talk. I just want to do a one small advertisement for a workshop we're organizing in Glasgow in March 14 to 16, specifically on soft tissue modeling. And we have all the important people in the area coming to talk about how to model soft tissues. And we also have clinical people to come to talk about problems need to be addressed. And certainly inverse approach would be one important topic. Thank you.
In the earlier part of your talk, you mentioned that you correlated the stress, although they were obtained by the simple model, in a better way than pressure or... And have you correlated your more advanced stresses with pain?
We haven't, and there's a reason. First, the nonlinear approach is very time-consuming. We haven't finished all the 51 patients yet. The other more important thing is... the criteria was estimated from experimental data using a linear approach as well. And you have to do that first. And because when people did experiments, they always use simple assumption to estimate this is right. What actually happened is a doctor in the 60s, the 50s, 60s, injected the volume into the patient's common bile duct until the patient said, oh, it's so painful. And then he stops, and then he records the pressure, and then we can use that to estimate the stress in the common bile duct.
But so you also said that patients after the gallbladder operation they still had pain. But this pain how can this pain be explained if it is due to stress?
We believe that the stress is a stress which causes pain, and some of these patients they have no higher stress. They have a pain. So the gallbladder is removed, but they still have pain. That shows the pain is from somewhere else. It's not in the gallbladder. Yeah. So we want to identify those patients so they don't have to do operations. What they should do, that's for doctors to decide.
You compared your results with the Fung model. So you've got the Hallsapp Fell-Ogden model with the Fung model. Now, the Fung model, if I remember right, has residual stress in there. And as I understand it, you're ignoring that at the moment in your results shown here. But yet you're getting a better fit to experimental data.
For the arterial model, the residual stress configuration is all decided, all measured. We can use that. It's only gallbladder model, we don't know. But for arterial model, we know what the residual stress is. So we can't put that in. So for that comparison, we just use everything that was measured from that paper. They already measured everything. We have to do the same for our gallbladder. We try to measure it. In fact, we start to measure it now, and we cut it open, it also sprung open. But the gallbladder is a more complicated geometry. So you cut it in this direction, it sprung open this direction, but not like arterial, it's only cylindrical, it's easier.
Do your results suggest that residual stress is not playing a dominant role?
It does. Because if you don't consider residual stress at all, you tend to overestimate your stress, because residual stress is tend to reduce the stress to some extent. So I think if we also added our residual stress in our model, probably the high stress will be reduced a bit somewhat. But we haven't done that part. But for arterial model validation, I believe we put in the residual stress for the arterial model in that model when we do the validation, because that is known.
Let's thank Professor Woe again for an excellent wind-up.